the A News Podcast. This is episode 32 for October 6, 2017. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information and commentary at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Edgelords, Trolls, and a Vibrant Anarchy. So if I understand this correctly, the criticism of edgelords is that they are all about being controversial for the sake of controversy. That, like trolls, they don't believe or don't necessarily believe in anything, or in what they're saying at this moment. But they're saying it for the purpose of upsetting other people or making a name for themselves, or both. Unlike more generic trolls, though, there is specifically an association with politics, whether that's nihilism or fascism, that the name caller disagrees with. Much like the criticism of ITS, the assumption is both that there is nothing behind the rhetoric and that the rhetoric is an indicator of terrible acts. I grew up with edge as a good word, one associated with being on the outskirts of what was understood and or accepted, one that was intimately connected with anarchy, at least in theory, and I find myself rejecting this modern parlance slash renaming of troll. While some trolls and edgelords are painfully self-sabotaging and miserable, they play, or could play, an essential role in saying things that are unpopular, and that encourage us to consider things that are unpleasant, but important. Looking up the definitions of edgelord also brings up references to social justice warriors, as they exist in opposition to each other. And that seems about right in my experience of these terms. If the criticism of social justice warrior is that they're people who A, are self-righteous and sanctimonious, and B, have too shallow an understanding of real-world problems, then edgelords are people who don't take anything seriously and aren't willing to take a stand or commit to anything. There are obviously issues with both extremes, and just as obviously, people will tend to fall more on one side of that dichotomy or the other. So it's better to interact with each other so that we don't each fall off our own cliffs. My last real point is to ponder the idea that edgelords and trolls in general, at their best, encourage people to take context into account. If you can't gauge someone's sincerity in any given particular instance, then you need to look at what they've said or done before to determine what they're actually saying now. Obviously, in the case of anonymous posters, there's no real ability to do that, but then the best trolls and edgelords have always been in meat space and named. Since I'm a person who tends towards ruts and excessive stability, perhaps I am in a particular position to value and appreciate people who bring the chaos and who remind me to bend. I think that people who encourage us to take context into account is a good thing, and it's something that is counter to the cultural tendencies these days. Two postscripts or afterwards or something. The fact that these, edgelord and social justice warrior, are terms I only hear online, might be a reason to not even engage with them. But probably they're terms that are used in actual face-to-face conversations, just not when I'm around. To the extent that edgelords are looked down on for being socially inept losers, I can only say that anarchists have always been losers, that winning in this society is only winning at a losing game.
Never worry, that is the way that I roll. I'm a bad man. What is it? Let me say again. You can try copy like a slave to a trend. Nothing they can say and nothing they can do. It's no problem for me, but it's a problem for you.
What's new this week? Anarchists on the Catalan referendum, three perspectives from the streets. From CrimeThink, of course. This is another fine example of anarchist reporting and raises the elephant in the corner regarding the desire of anarchists to participate and encourage resistance to a state, even when that resistance is in support of a different state. There are no answers here, but some interesting reflection. Quote, within the anarchist movement, there are people who support the referendum itself and also people who don't. Independentist people are demanding basic democratic rights and civil liberties, such as the right to vote, and some anarchists believe that anarchists should be out there with them. There are also people involved in the independence movement who we lost track of years ago when the political parties like CUP and Podemos that gained momentum after the 15M movement in 2011 institutionalized the energy from the streets. Now, with the referendum, people are returning to the streets, so we decided it was an important moment for us to be out there too. But this has created a good deal of debate within and between anarchist collectives, because we definitely are not coming from the same place politically as many of the independentistas. For us, it has been really complicated. For me personally, sure, I hold contradictory positions all the time, like supporting certain reformist campaigns or engaging with single-issue movements. But to defend a democratic process toward national dependence, it's very hard to figure out where I stand. Many of the comrades in our neighborhood are trying to figure it out too. Unquote. There's nothing new about this debate slash quandary. It's the same one, with some obvious specific differences, as the ones that were being had around Occupy in the U.S. and various moments of popular revolt in Greece, among probably countless others. Peter Gelderlos put it pretty well by saying that these moments of upheaval can best be treated as times when people might be open to a different way, and that anarchists cannot get stuck by the state's formation of the conflict as being only dichotomous.
Red Rosa, a book review, from LibCom. This is a mostly favorable book report that makes some interesting points about feminism, writing, biographies, and history in general. Quote, despite her contradictions and equivocations, Luxembourg was a lucid writer with profound historical understanding and perspective. The fact that this never solidified into a more practical proposal for workers' self-organization, based on her ideas of revolutionary spontaneity, i.e. spontaneous uprisings from below, without the vanguard leading the way, is a shame. She criticized the gap between the leadership and the masses, but never managed to take steps to overcome it, either theoretically or organizationally. As far as we know, the Communist Party of Germany that she set up never really tackled it. It never offered a fundamentally new way of working class organization. Maybe the concurrent anarchist debates could have offered a bridge towards it, but due to a hangover from the debates between Marx and Bakunin around the time of the First International, there was a deep hostility to anything anarchism-related and a virulently anti-anarchist reflex, even amongst those on the left of the SPD. Unquote. LibCom's Anarchy is not mine, but the site does have an occasional gem, and the archives are a valuable resource.
News of Opposition, October 2017, from Dialectical Delinquents, a list of actions and the related repression from around the world, in this case South Africa, Murcia in Spain, Algeria, Copenhagen, Ukraine, Kenya, Nairobi, Dominican Republic, Morocco, France, Ireland, Iran, etc. Oops, this was taken down because it's still in process, so you have some things to look forward to.
Greece, Athens, taking responsibility for Kerameikos metro station on the 11th of June, 2017, by anarchists. From actforfree.nostate.net, in Greece, where it is possible and among some folks common to scam your way onto public transportation, comes this report of resistance to increased surveillance and transportation restructuring. Quote, we'll move freely where, whenever, in any way we want. We refuse control over transport, cameras, bars, security, controllers, tickets, and give our own tone to the Athens alternative nightlife, virtually breaking the barriers and showing the basic ones that benefit most from the operation, capital and its maintaining of profitability. The cause of free movement is permanent and open. The struggle for it does not stop in the summer and continues by any means. We will not wait for legislative measures to react. We are showing our intentions from now on and say that we will always choose the time and place to unleash our denials in the planned restructuring of the mass transport system. Unquote.
Italy, Lecce. Idea and Action. Fair of Anarchist Publishing, 7 and 8, October 2017. From mpolothia.net. A different kind of book fair, one talking more about publishing and its significance as part of anarchist practice. Quote, 2 days of books, meetings, presentations, and discussions to speak of the history and actuality of anarchist ideas and action, of the indissoluble link that unites them and their ability to engage in world in the perspective of changing it. Unquote. Wish I could be there. If we're lucky, maybe someone will do a report back on it? In English? Because I'm lame and don't know Italian yet?
Milan, Italy, the commodification of the ideals of liberation. From insurrectionnewsworldwide.com, this is a report from a presentation done by Contagio Antispecista at a festival in Milan. It goes into some detail about the commodification of veganism as a lifestyle rather than as a radical perspective and practice, and names a few specific bad guys. It also raises the issue of words that start out as radical markers that become co-opted by capitalism to mean something that fits easily into the status quo. Quote, the anti-speciesist fight, in order to be credible, should necessarily be unattackable and therefore lasting, and it should have a unique and clear meaning for everyone, That's why we talk about liberationist anti-speciesism, and therefore about total liberation, up to arrive at one only proposition. Animal liberation, which encloses within itself non-human and human animals in the context in which they live, the earth. All the aspects that led to a deviation of anti-speciesism for yesterday as for today originated from the initial alteration. Abolitionism, anti-speciesism, with all its aberrant consequences, a weak and reductionist approach to anti-speciesism. The pioneers of abolitionist orientation were international associations like WWF and PETA, but in the last years, the abolitionist orientation has found promoters and advocates in that kind of approaches similar to Leonardo Caffo's one, and from a part of animal rights associations like Acer Animali, Animal Equality, and Sea Shepherd, which, in addition to selling off veganism as a challenge through initiatives as 12 Steps to Veganism or the Vegan Week, and supporting the homogenization of veganism by the industry in the wake of For Animals as Anything Goes, Animals Are Not Interested in Politics, and Least But Not Last, We Are Their Voice, and Oceans First of All. They set up collaborations with personalities, both those involved in politics and not, who are tied to and linked to institutions and bodies of power, in fact, delegitimizing the radical, clean, pure, and libertarian aspect of the anti-speciesist fight of Barry Horn's memory. These manners cause inconsistency and contradictions, which, from a libertarian perspective, are irreconcilable at this point, making the animal liberation fight attackable from outside by those who sensed a mere business in the wake of a standardization in which veganism is not a political act anymore, but just the fashion of the moment, or a stale farce, unquote. Attempting to stand on a static definition seems like an unwinnable struggle, given capitalism's known strengths in this field, but that doesn't need to distract from the other points made in this piece.
Italy. Update on police repression against anarchist comrades in Florence, from InsurrectionNewsWorldwide.com. Quote, on the 1st of January 2017, following the explosion of a homemade bomb in front of the fascist bookshop in which a policeman from the bomb disposal unit lost a hand and an eye, several homes of comrades were searched. The police were hoping to find firearms and/or explosives. The searches didn't lead to nothing except for the seizure of pamphlets, computers, clothing, and other everyday objects. An investigation against persons unknown was launched with the intention to charge them with the offenses manufacturing, possession, and transportation of an explosive or incendiary device to a public place, and attempted murder, unquote. This is a pretty short contextualization of some of the repression around Operation Panic that continues this month. It gives addresses for two Italians held in prison.
Scout Schultz, Remembering Means Fighting, from CrimeThink. Another interesting piece by CrimeThink on the repercussions and manipulation of the death by cop of Scout Schultz, as well as the pathetic responses by local left-wing and progressive groups. Quote, the following Monday, September 18th, hundreds of students, workers, faculty, and bereaved friends gathered at the Kessler Campanile at Georgia Tech to hold a vigil for Scout. Many young people were crying and holding candles. It quickly became clear that this vigil was also a part of the repressive strategy as administrators and student bureaucrats refused to allow Scout's closest friends to speak. The event became a photo opportunity for an administration determined to conceal Scout's death beneath a veneer of unity and campus pride. On Friday, September 22nd, when a small group of Scout's friends attempted to hold a vigil and sit-in at the counseling center, police shut down the campus. Classes and interviews were canceled, helicopters circled overhead, and administrators encouraged teachers to cancel classes, claiming falsely that Antifa was going to start a riot. Instead, undercover police attempted to intimidate the crowd while right-wing students yelled Harambe jokes at mourners, an alt-right racist dog whistle referring to a gorilla shot and killed when a child entered its enclosure, unquote.
Hamburg, Germany. In Italy, anarchist comrade Ricardo was released from prison October 5th, 2017. From anarisha.net, short report back about a G20 prisoner getting out. Yay!
Media. Warzone-free online zine distro launched. From Instruction News Worldwide, quote, the name Warzone Distro comes from the acknowledgement that the totality of capitalist industrial society, including the logic of control and domination, learned submission, and the misery of its daily reproduction, i.e. wage slavery, is a warfare against all living beings. Therefore, every space dominated by industrial society is a war zone in constant conflict with freedom. With the understanding of consumer life as interwoven warfare, a sense of urgency is maintained, encouraging attack here and now rather than waiting for when the time is right. Unquote. This is a green distro started in September 2017 and has zines of the post-left, nihilist, insurrectionary, and of course eco-centered variety, including a couple I've never heard before. Go team!
Trouble 6, Adapt and Destroy, Counterinsurgency and Social War, 33 minutes. The Trouble episode on informants was good, but this episode is less interesting. This video is filled with jargon and rhetoric and 60s exceptionalism that's worst with the masked narrator, but is in even most of the interviews with long-term activists. There is some decent basic history of movements and analysis of police power in the U.S. and in Canada, and the relationship of drugs to counterinsurgency. Perhaps viewers will be inspired to read the texts of some of those interviewed, so that could be good. The argument of this video comes down to mass organizing as a way to threaten the state's legitimacy, as if the state is not prepared to, and hasn't already, brutally rejected its own liberal mythology in the face of resistance.
Podcast, Autonomous Action Radio. This is not a fake. Subversion number 1312. An hour. This Australian podcast says it's not fake so many times that one wonders what in-joke one has wandered in on. The level of dialogue is fairly sad, criticizing Trump, information about a woman jailed because she couldn't pay fines, and confusing commentary about whether cops shot students or beat them up. There's also a section with people in Spain talking about wanting to vote, and a significant excerpt from Trouble, Episode 6, and some information on refugees, fake Antifa sites in Australia.
The Hotwire number 6, September 27th, 2017, 35 minutes. Report back on the alt-right week in Berkeley. Alt-right try to blockade the Houston Anarchist Book Fair, followed up by attempted cop invasion. Neo-Confederate tires slashed in Richmond, take a knee protests, the hypocrisy of free speech responses from the right, St. Louis daily protests in their second week, protests against officials trying to profit from aid to Mexico, the efficacy of tripods for forest defense, teen steals bulldozer and crushes cop cars. Many references to other Channel Zero projects, and then additionally, advertisements for those projects.
The Hotwire number 7, October 4th, 2017, 35 minutes. Belarus actions, G20 prisoner solidarity action, trees join humans as being polluters. Marches and banners, ICE actions against sanctuary cities, badger hunt sab, raccoons in banks, the Catalan referendum counts as an experiment for anarchists. Can they intervene in the struggle for independence without supporting a new state? Neo-fascists are in the German electoral politics for the first time since Nazi Germany in the face of protests. Guest report about the German resistance. British far-right terrorism groups and the problem of labeling anti-state actions as terrorism because it legitimizes police, etc. Brief hurricane relief info and minor shallow Trump comments. I wish Rebel Girl would listen to her own podcast. She might be inspired to vary her rhythm a little more. More on J20 support and the Dakota anti-pipeline activists. Advertisements start at about 28 minutes.
The Final Straw, Kevin Tucker on Anarcho-Primitivism, Part 1, an hour and 10 minutes. Herman Bell is a 69-year-old prisoner, and he's in particular trouble. Check him out and write him a letter and or email the prison commissioner responsible for his guards. Sean starts at 9:20 and talks about cops using pepper spray against protesters and the definition of violence as being efforts successful or not against property. Also tips about dealing with pepper spray attacks. Don't rub or wipe and wear safety goggles, among other things. Tucker starts at about 15 minutes and begins by saying that green anarchy has been around for about 10 years, which is a joke that Bursts doesn't respond to, unfortunately. Tucker names anarcho-primitivism as an analysis of domestication, and so is dealing with issues that began before civilization, which is regarding cities, but that doesn't include Western science. Apparently, because some scientists are acting in good faith, that makes science okay. Freddie Perlman and James Scott are cited extensively. If you have a friend who wants to know what Tucker thinks, it's better to listen to this than to read his books. He's a better speaker than a writer, so there's that.
Anarchy Radio, October the 3rd, 2017. An hour, rant about how mass murder is about industrialized society and complaints about how no one understands this and name-calling about any thinking that isn't along the lines that Jay-Z has already pointed out for us. What it's like to watch the destruction of everything we know. Conversations are a healthy impulse, but what really matters is acts of resistance. Problems with NPR, still no word on the first annual Rewilding Conference, some tech failures, eagles attacking drones, students can't write by hand anymore, sex doll uprising comes up again, quote, we know what the problem is, we know what the solutions are, unquote, the fading away of stamp collecting.
Of the week. What is anarchism in 2017? This week, we ask a perennial question. What is anarchism today? Is it the activity of anarchists? Is it an ideology of negatives? No state, no capitalism? How about an ideology of positives? Mutual aid, solidarity, and sharing? How do modern anarchistic activities map to our definition of anarchism? How do you describe anarchism to your grandmother in such a way as she understands and agrees with your choice to be an anarchist? Have you convinced her to join us? Hey. Tell me about what anarchism is for you in 2017.
It seems like it's mostly negation in 2017. I don't know. It seems like a lot of the times trying to frame it in, like, what are you for? Seems kind of forced in a lot of ways. It seems like the kind of like what are you for experiences that I have had kind of consist of hanging out with like other like-minded anarchists, usually in like non-urban areas. But as far as like living in a city goes, it does mostly look like negation in a lot of ways.
Do you express your anarchy through activities? Through, like, do you go to marches? Do you protest? Do you do activism? Do you do projects? What is anarchy in your daily life look like?
I'm definitely not into the activism kind of approach.
Were you ever?
I was.
You went through it.
Unfortunately, yeah.
No, I think it's an important part of our growth to experience things and understand them and then decide whether or not you're going to move through them or move past them. I don't think it's unfortunate that you had that period in your life.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you start from like within limitations and then hopefully like you can get beyond those limitations and work outside leftist frameworks and negate those. But yeah, I don't know. It seems like a lot of people, as we kind of talked about before, like spend a lot of their time doing anarchism on the internet, and like for me, yeah, I don't really feel the urge to like represent myself as an anarchist on the internet, though like I do check out those spaces to kind of feel like current or maybe like, yeah, kind of see what people are talking about in other places. But for me, like, I don't know, I would rather like, I guess, spend my time in terms of like socializing kind of like with maybe like one or two other people that I do trust and would call an accomplice that I would feel comfortable like living dangerously with. And in terms of like traveling or being in new places, if I haven't built that trust yet, to at least be able to have, you know, good faith conversations that challenge each other's ideas. I don't know.
It's not a surprise to anybody who's listened to me on this podcast before that I'm a fan of meaningful conversations. Mm-hmm. And we don't really talk about it here, but I have said that I'm not necessarily interested in new people. And part of that is about not having been around for so long and living where I live and watching new people come and go so quickly. And part of that is also about there's a limit to how much you can trust new people, which mm-hmm. limits the kind of relationship that you can have with them. So I do, I am surrounding myself with intentional allies, people I've known a long time or know deeply well in a not quite so long period of time, so that you can have accomplices mm-hmm. and live dangerously, however you want to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And because those aren't the kind of things that you talk about in rooms, I don't know if that's still a part of what it means to be an anarchist. A friend of mine, a Black Panther who was in the BLA, the Black Liberation Army, his complaint was always that anarchists had absolutely no relationships with the criminal element of the world. And how could you possibly expect to accomplish anything that mm-hmm. you might want to accomplish if you didn't know people who could get you things and move things and get things done? And because, of course, this was all fundamental part of the BLA. If you don't know, go look it up. And I have always been disappointed at how clean contemporary anarchy is.
Totally.
And hopefully I'm just wrong and I don't know, which is awesome because don't talk about that shit. But so you, are you alone in your life in that you don't do anarchy on the internet, or are you mostly surrounded by people who don't do anarchy on the internet?
Yeah, I would say like my accomplices are close, like anarchist friends, for the most part are also don't really represent themselves on the internet. And yeah, kind of lost my train of thought there.
That's okay. When you get to be around other anarchists who are internet anarchists, do you feel like you are missing something?
I don't think so. Like I said, like I do, I check the websites and I kind of see what's going on and stuff. I mean, I would much prefer to talk about like, sort of like contemporary books or like the, you know, kind of like books that people are interested in. And just what we were talking about before, like I'm really excited by sort of like illegalist, types of like writing, and kind of like reading about like, you know, how other anarchists sort of, like, live their anarchy and all that. I don't know. I do spend a lot of time in solitude, and I spend a lot of time reading and reflecting and, like, writing for myself, mostly, because, yeah, I don't really represent myself in that way either as of right now. Yeah.
So in the second paragraph, the question is, and I think this is the more interesting part of the conversation, how do modern anarchist activities map to our definition of anarchism?
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that I wanted to mix up this segment for who was having the conversation, because my anarchistic activities roughly mostly look about the same that they did 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
With a few exceptions. And so at some point, it seems that I came to understand what my definition of anarchism was and how I wanted to live with that definition. And I don't know how, when I look around the world for the most part and see what anarchists are engaging in, or at least the things that end up on the internet and mm-hmm. on Facebook and on anarchist news, and it's going down, and I frequently don't understand how that maps to an anarchist politic.
Yeah.
So that's fine. Generation gaps and, you know, being a little out of touch, and that's okay. But I'm interested in how your activities map to your definition of anarchism.
Yeah. Like I said, like the day-to-day, like, I think living dangerously, whatever that means for you, is, like, really important, and, like, you know, feeling a sense of adrenaline in your life and excitement is really important. And yeah, like, I think it's cool to have, like, projects. Like, I mean, I obviously really enjoy reading, and I'm, you know, I like that people share what they write. And so, like, yeah, creative projects are good. I still am trying to, like, figure out how to kind of put that line between, like, a creative project and then, like, kind of, like, reproducing work. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of, like, a question as well. Yeah, I don't know. Just looking at the question again, I think I covered it.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know that I necessarily have anything to say about that. Mm-hmm. You know, I do Little Black Cart, and that's a pretty fundamental part of my anarchy. And it's about ideas and discussion and debate and making anarchy challenging, having difficult discussions, intense examination of thought, because I think that that's how we get better, and that's how we evolve. I don't want to say progress. But I've been doing this for a long time, so I don't quite feel like I'm in a rut, but I definitely feel like I'm in a place where I'm accomplishing the things that I'd like to accomplish. Probably not as well as I would like to accomplish them, so there was room for examination and change. But that's, you know, that's a hard project. I think that the question goes to an interesting place. How do you describe anarchism to your grandmother in such a way as she understands and agrees with your choice to be an anarchist? And have you convinced her to join you? Which is really a pointed way of saying, how do we talk to people that aren't anarchists? Yeah. Is there an appropriate, palatable, approachable way that we talk to people who are anarchists that we might want to be on our side? Or maybe that's actually not the project at all, to talk to anarchists. I'm not sure. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not. I personally don't really fuck with that. I think it's cool to kind of have that like permanent conflict kind of like approach to things. And yeah, like, I don't know, like, I guess the like non-anarchists in my life, like, I don't really bother talking about anarchism with them, but I guess like the way that I think they see me in like a lot of like constant sort of conflict or whatever, like, people have a sense of who I am, even if I'm not like laying out like what is anarchy and like, so I don't know. But yeah, I'm not really one to kind of like drop anarchists like seeds or conversations. I don't know. I used to, maybe at one point, for sure.
I spend quite a bit of my life in the Midwest, around my family and around people connected to my family. And I remember years and years ago having a conversation with my grandfather about my politics. My grandfather is a man of the Depression era. He fought in the Korean War. He's conservative, a member of the American Legion and the NRA. He was a farmer, and then he worked on the railroad for many decades before he retired. And the best that I could describe to him, you know, I tried to frame it in his world. So he's a Republican because he thinks the government needs to get out of your life. And so I just, you know, extended that out. Like, I want the government to be so far out of my life that the government doesn't exist anymore, because I think people
destroy.
I think people are capable of making these decisions for themselves, and we don't need strangers on the other side of the country making these decisions for us, or something like that. And definitely hitting all of the points that would resonate with him to get him to not, you know, he's very important to me. So for him to not think that I was wrong or unacceptable or something, I'm not sure. I definitely wanted to win his favor. And I also have quite a few children in my life. And I remember when they were younger, sitting down with them. And there's a pamphlet that we distribute called Anarchy 101, who I do not remember who wrote it, but it's just a series of questions about how anarchy works and its history. And I read that to them and let them ask me questions. And I was less interested in currying their favor like I was with my grandfather. But it was very important to me that they had some understanding. I do remember the youngest boy of the group asked me who the god of anarchy was, because he knew I didn't believe in Jesus. So he was trying to understand who I did believe in. That was my favorite question. But mostly I don't have conversations with strangers, but I do a lot have conversations with people that I care about, who don't live in my everyday world, who live in the rest of the everyday world. And I'm getting more questions about Antifa and attacks and fighting as I go home. And that makes for interesting conversation from rural Midwestern people who just want their lives to be simple and safe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, you know, when you're an anarchist, like, your ideas are going to kind of naturally come out, like, and you don't necessarily need, like, an agenda. Like, this is who I am and this is what anarchism is. But yeah, naturally, when you're around people and, you know, you're, if you choose to have a conversation, like an honest one, like your ideas are going to like be apparent. So, but yeah, I don't know. I'm also not really like, I've never really been huge kind of like family person in general. And so when I am around family members, I don't know, I'm, I guess a bit more reserved.
Sure.
So yeah.
Well, do you have anything else to add?
No.
Okay, well, thanks for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me. Focus all the time, never get caught.
The Weekly Anarchy 101 Question and Some Answers. In this segment, we take questions and some of the answers and responses from the website anarchy101.org, a user-moderated Q&A site for anarchists to answer questions on anarchist thought and activity. Most questions on the site have a lot of commentary that we don't read, but is certainly at least half the fun. The question this week is, why do the rebellious end up coming back to reality? To me, it's a curious phenomenon that people go through, quote, rebellious phases, unquote, so often, only to end up embracing tradition, authority, and organization in the end. For example, most of the people who were part of the hippie movement, which, by the standards of the time period they lived in, violated some very sacred tenets, having sex with lots of different people, political protests, drugs, homelessness, etc. But many who joined the hippie movement later ended up embracing organized religion, work, rigid schedules, authority, etc. I guess the better question is, how do people maintain their rebellion when their efforts have been frustrated? Only one answer for this question so far. This is the answer. I like this question, so I will give it a shot. It is my experience that there are at least two reasons folks bail on living a radical life. One, their radicalism was merely a phase. This may sound somewhat dismissive, but I don't mean it that way. I think the extent to which the acceptable values of modern human life, mass society, education, job, home, kids, rinse and repeat, are ingrained, indoctrinated into everyone, making it extraordinarily difficult to break free of. Eventually, those values might win out over the continued struggle for a liberated life. What it means to be free becomes adaptable to those values. Two, many, many folks are convinced that the only way they can live a radically different life, one that does not adhere to or prioritize those values mentioned above, is to, quote, change the world, unquote. Mass social change is seen as the only path to a truly radical life. Once they realize, as most will at some point, that changing the world to match what they want is impossible, no way to change others, and or undesirable, there is no one right way for everybody, they become disillusioned and revert back to some more practical way of being in the world, which typically means allowing those values to regain prominence at some level. My own disillusionment led to me bailing on the, quote, mass movement part of the concept, as well as the acceptance of mass society as some requirement or ideal, and invigorated my desire to create my own life for myself, prioritizing my own values as much as I am capable over those that have been imposed. I also think people's perceptions of what constitutes a rebellious life, what is success in terms of being a rebel, and related concepts, all can play into how one deals with the inevitable frustrations of desiring a life outside the status quo. As always, if you didn't like that answer or have your own questions, go to Anarchy 101 and join the conversation.
We sang the praise of all beings, forcing down another drink, and you asked me who would be the first to die.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lino Mabel, written by Jackie. The editorial was written by Chisel. It was narrated by Chisel and a friend. And we thank Ariel and a friend with their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material are available at littleblackheart.com and news and up-to-the-minute commentary at anarchistnews.org.